From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, it's called Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Oh, the East Coast getting it again. More than 2 feet of snow piling up in parts of New England, breaking records set 37 years ago, as forecasters warned still more winter weather on the way. As of late Monday, the flight tracking website FlightAware.com said that more than 2,600 flights have already been canceled, 573 either originating from or heading to Boston's Logan Airport. And new data showing that the vanishing of polar ice is not the result of runaway global warming. 75 years ago, it retreated more than now. It's an Earth cycle. Let's check in with the author, of course, of Not by Fire, But by Ice, and also Magic, Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps, Robert Felix. Robert, I want your assessment on what's happening on this planet.
Oh, my gosh, George. Well, it sure is not global warming. You know, you're talking about the snowstorm that's back east, and there's roofs collapsing. Of course, I've been saying that, but they've had 5 feet of snow back in the Boston area in less than 2 weeks. 5 feet.
You and I talked 2 years ago. Of course, we talk all the time, but 2 years ago on this program, and I remember you saying, what happens when we get 5 to 8 feet of snow on roofs of houses? Remember that?
Yeah, I do, and it's happening, and there's more coming. You know, the roofs are collapsing in Quincy and Rockland and Bridgewater, Massachusetts. But Boston set a record for the most snow in a 30-day period. That 61 inches. That's 5 feet. You know, my wife is 5'3".
She'd be so buried in snow.
That'd be above her. You know, it'd be above her eyes. But what I wonder is what's going to happen to all those wild animals.
Oh, my gosh. When the snow melts and thaws away, God knows what's going to be there.
Or right now. And it's not only there. It's happening. Kitimat, B.C., they had 2 meters of snow in just 2 days. In France, there's an area with 2 meters of snow. It's happening in Germany, a place with 2 meters. And I'm talking about... It's going on in more than one place.
Yet we have a drought in California. California could use some of that snow, which obviously would come down as rain here.
It could.
I don't know why some areas are getting blasted, Robert, and others are not.
Well, you know, when you look at the maps of the polar vortex, where that's where the West Coast is sort of being spared. But if you look at the maps of where the polar vortex go, and then you look on the right-hand side of my webpage at the map from the Ice Age period, it's almost identical where that polar vortex takes the snow and where the ice extended to during the last Ice Age. So, it does have to do with that polar vortex, but I am not surprised to see it happening.
All right, Robert Felix. Robert's website will be part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. I'm going to start using a lot of hashtags on Twitter for you in the future to get some instant reaction to some of the things going on here. The safest time to fly during pregnancy is before 37 weeks, or if carrying twins, before 32 weeks, according to new advice. The Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecology says flying is not harmful during low-risk pregnancy, but there may be side effects. If more than 28 weeks pregnant, women should take their medical notes and a letter. You got to be careful because of the radiation that you're exposed to when you're going through some of those detectors. The measles outbreak spread to 3 more states in Washington, D.C., affecting 19 additional people. Doesn't seem like a lot. So far, 121 people have been affected. But, you know, measles stopped up until 2000, was declared eliminated in the United States. But you know what? So far, it's kicking on. 644 cases in the United States last year, and they say at this pace, it's going to exceed that. Samsung is warning customers about discussing personal information in front of their smart television set. I kid you not. That's going to kill their sales. The warning applies to TV viewers who control their smart TV using its voice activation feature. Such TV sets listen to some of what is said in front of them and may share details they hear with Samsung or third parties. I've got to check in with the expert on privacy, Catherine Albrecht, on this one. This is unbelievable, Catherine.
This is like George Winston, you know, from 1984. George Orwell was rolling over in his grave. These TVs, right? They don't tell you on the website. They don't say in the box. But when you get them home, you plug them in. You plug them into your Wi-Fi so you have movies on demand.
Yep.
And they've got a camera that's watching you, a microphone that's listening to you for your, quote, convenience, so that when you say, TV, turn to channel 7, it listens and it acts on your commands. But what they don't tell you is that by listening, it's actually taking all of the microphone feed and giving it to a third party that transcribes it. And we don't even know who this third party is. Samsung isn't even telling us. So in there, buried in their 45-page privacy policy is this little fine print that says, if the things you say in front of your TV include sensitive information, please be aware that these are among the things that we'll record and share with third parties. So your TV is sitting right there in your living room spying on you.
It's amazing. Now, by announcing this, what do you think they're going to do to Samsung TV sales?
I hope they put him in the toilet. I really do. I'm not buying a Samsung TV. And you know, the drag of this is you've already bought the thing and brought it home. You know, in many cases, you got the vase mount up the wall on the wall. You've invested a lot of time and energy in this. So the way to kill it is turn off the voice recognition. I personally would drive that thing back to the store and return it if it were me. But if you want to keep the TV, you've got to unplug it from all that stuff so that it's not capable of spying on you.
Couple of quick things, Catherine, I want to ask you. First of all, I have heard that you had a couple brain tumors removed, and I want to check in with you. What the heck's going
on? Yeah, I want to ask for prayers from Coast listeners. You guys have supported me through breast cancer and all kinds of crazy stuff. I had, during that very first blizzard, I got driven to emergency surgery in a snowplow, 90 minutes. During the travel ban, they wanted to put me on TV. They drove me down for an emergency brain tumor removal surgery, and I'm doing great. They got all the cancer. They say I'm in remission. And I'm in great shape, and we're just praying that the Lord gives me a lot more life to come. So if people could
good
just
for
be
you.
Praying for my healing,
I trust
great.
Benign.
Yeah. Well, no, they're breast cancer.
They are
cancer. Yeah, but I'm presenting in a kind of an interesting way because there's no other cancer anywhere in my body, and they think they got it.
Well, keep fine. And your book, I Won't Take the Mark. How's that
I Won't Take the Mark. It's up on Amazon now, and it's also at virtuepress.com with frames. We talked about it last month, and I heard from a lot of Coast listeners, nobody could find Virtue Press or I Won't Take the Mark, but it's everywhere now. So I encourage people to check it out and warn your kids about the Mark of the Beast. It's what we've been doing 10 years.
Okay. For. Catherine, we love you. Stay keep fighting.
Hey, thanks, George.
Take care. Catherine Albrecht. A 13-year-old boy shot and killed Sunday night in Chicago after he sneaked out of his home with his sisters to confront someone over posts on Facebook. Anthony Diaz and his two older sisters left their home in their neighborhood. The teens were jumped. Somebody pulled a gun and shot them. The launch of Deep Space Climate Observatory was scrubbed today due to the failure of an Air Force radar system. The next launch window is tomorrow. We may check in with our science advisor, Richard C. Hoagland, on this one to see how things go. This satellite, this Deep Space Observatory, will try to warn us of incoming coronal mass ejections and other solar storms, something we've been talking about for years. We need to insulate the power grid. Up next, it's called The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. Paul Hellyer joins us, former Minister of Defense of Canada. We'll talk with Paul a little bit about some of his UFO investigations as well. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. For the first couple hours, our guest will be Paul Hellyer. Paul was the youngest member of Parliament when he was first elected in 1949 in Canada. He also was its former defense minister, and we got to know Paul quite well when we talked with him about some UFO issues. He's a journalist as well. One of his books, Light at the End of the Tunnel, and also The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. Always a pleasure, Mr. Hellyer, having you on the show. How are you?
Good to talk to you, George. I'm just fine, thank you.
My gosh, things have been going on this planet so much. Paul, I can't see how it's going to slow down. Everything, everywhere is in a state of chaos.
Yes, and it was all predictable because most of it's deliberate.
I think you're right. I want to take a little bit of time. You're with me for a couple hours here, Paul, to talk with us about some of the UFO issues that have gone back. When you were the former Minister of Defense, when you were the Minister of Defense in Canada, did these UFO stories come across your desk then, or did you pick up on those after you got out?
No, the only thing that came across my desk were sightings. And I got the sightings, and some of them were natural phenomena, I think, about the same as in the United Kingdom, maybe something like 80% were natural phenomena of one kind or another, and the remaining 15 or 20% were generally unidentified objects flying in the air.
Were you a believer when you started getting these sighting reports?
No, I wasn't even interested. I was neither a believer nor a disbeliever. But as far as what was going on, Canada was actually investigating what was going on at that time, as was the United States. But there are a lot of things they don't tell their politicians in both countries. They're sort of the insiders who feel that they should have all of the information that's going on in the world of a secret nature and a lot of interesting stuff, and that they're entitled to keep that all to themselves. And so you have a very tightly knit group of people who are aware. For example, when the U.S. started the satellite surveillance, I think we had maybe 40 slots of people who knew what was going on, and that was all. And only of that 40, I think only about five were politicians. The rest were all public servants who are permanent members of the government.
When you started swinging over, Paul, to the side of, hey, you know what, maybe there's something to this. Maybe it's real. Maybe they are extraterrestrial. What was it that got you in that direction?
Well, it's a story I've told before, but it happened about 10 years ago, roughly, just a little over 10 years ago, when a young French-Canadian from, shouldn't say French-Canadian, French-speaking Canadian, bilingual, perfectly bilingual, from Ottawa started sending me material on the subject. And I didn't have time to read it, and I was honest enough to tell him that. And he said, well, don't worry. He said, maybe someday you will have time. And it's okay, as long as you understand that I'm not going to put everything down and read this stuff, that's okay with me. Then he sent me a book called The Day After Roswell.
Mm-hmm. Corso's book.
Yeah, Colonel Corso's book. And I thought to myself, well, that looks interesting. And maybe I'll take a look at it sometime. And, of course, in the meantime, he phoned me about an ABC special that was being put together by Peter Jennings and asked me to watch it, which I did. And, I said to myself after I'd watched it, even though they tried to be neutral in the program, I said, why would all those former policemen and United States Air Force retired officers and commercial pilots and air traffic controllers, why would they say that they'd seen UFOs if they haven't?
That's right.
I mean, why would they lie? They had no reason to lie. They weren't getting paid to lie, like some people are.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why would they lie? Well, then, when I looked for the book to read in my summer vacation that year, I couldn't find it, so I read The Life of Pi, which turned out to be very amusing, and I didn't really know until we got close to the end whether it was fact or fiction. But the following year, I was looking for another book and couldn't find it. And lo and behold, there was the day after Roswell staring me in the face. So I took it and found it to be both interesting and compelling. And I wasn't far into the book before I said to myself, well, this doesn't sound like fiction to me, because I knew the names of the generals and the airfields in the book from my days in national defense. There were things that were familiar to me. So I was at the lake where I usually go for a few days in the summer to try and rest up a little bit and read a book or two. And I was sitting reading it, and my nephew came by and said, "What are you reading?" I told him, "Well, this book by Colonel Korschel about UFOs." And he said, "Well, I'm a skeptic." I said, "Well, that's okay, you know. You're entitled to be a skeptic." So he went home, and a couple of days later, he phoned me and said, "I phoned the general and asked him, told him what you were reading, and he said that every word of it was true and more. And where can I get a copy of the book?" So I told him. By then, I had finished it, and I was absolutely convinced that it was authentic. And so, strangely enough, just before I left on holiday, just days before, I had been invited to speak in Toronto at a symposium that put on by Victor Vigiani and Mike Bird, and I had no intention whatsoever of going, of accepting their invitation, none, and because I knew nothing about the subject. But after reading the book, I said to myself, there are huge issues involved here, huge issues. Not just that the people of the United States have been spending a lot of money back engineering all of this technology and not knowing about it, no one telling them about it, which is a big enough issue and you know, a fundamental issue. But what happens when we Earthlings get the same technology, get to the point where we have the same technology? Do we, how do we use it? What are we going to use it for? And so I said, this is a subject that has to be in the public domain. This is something not only the people of the United States who primarily should know because they've been paying for it, but everybody should know because there are potential consequences that are extremely grave and you know, I shouldn't say world-shaking because it's sort of cosmos-shaping, shaking. And I thought, I have a responsibility here to say something about this. But before I did, I asked Philip for the general's phone number. I phoned him, and even before I could open my mouth and say hello and how's the weather, he said, "Every word is true and more."
And spent riveting.
20 minutes telling me about the more, which included the fact that United States officials had had face-to-face meetings with beings from other star systems.
You know, as wild as that sounds, Paul, it's beginning to leak out more and more over the years about these meetings. I just came back from the Conscious Life Expo here in Los Angeles, where I met Craig Campobasso. Again, I know him. He's been on the program, and we've met at a couple events. And he did a documentary called Stranger at the Pentagon about an ET that came here to try to give us technology, met with President Eisenhower, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and they all decided, no, we're not going to do that because it'll disrupt everything. You know, we don't want free energy, and we don't want all these things. The story on the face of it seemed preposterous, but the more I got into it, the more I'm saying to myself, this could have happened.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And the story of the single EV, as they called them, at the Pentagon, I think, has been pretty well authenticated, has it not?
Well, they think it has. They think it has. It's a wonderful documentary, and it brings out a story that I think is getting people to wake up a little bit more.
But it's much wider and deeper than that, as you know.
Yeah.
Bob Lazar, I'm sure, have you ever had him on your program?
He's been on our show many times.
Yeah. He's speaking at the International UFO Conference this year again, I understand, coming out again after about 15
yeah,
or 20 years.
Yeah, he's coming up big time. Hey, Paul, hold on. We're going to take this break, but we're going to come back and talk more with you about this and then get into your new work, The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. Riveting story there, too. I can't wait to get into that. Paul Hellyer, our guest, his website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And as far as we're concerned, just like us on Facebook, like so many of you are, and then follow us on Twitter if you would. And if you need to email me, George at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. More with Paul Hellyer. We'll wrap up on his thoughts on extraterrestrials and get into his latest work, The Money Mafia, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Paul Hellyer, former Minister of Defense of Canada. Paul, a couple of years ago, we were in Washington, D.C. at Stephen Bassett's event. Do you think we'll ever get full disclosure on the UFOs and ETs from government?
Probably you and I will be long gone by the time we get full disclosure, but we should try and get it. When I say get it, I don't mean 100%, but we should at least start getting somebody to tell the truth for a change.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this issue is a very serious issue because it's affected the whole psyche of the United States. You go right back to the day that the first, at least the landing took place in New Mexico at Roswell, and the announcement was made by the base commander that they had recovered a flying disc.
And they scrambled after that, didn't they?
Yeah, and that was the truth, and it appeared in the local press, the way it had come out. Well, then, as you well know, later the same day, this was countermanded by Brigadier General Roger Ramey, who the commander of the 8th Air Force and the base commander's chief, and they said no, it was a weather balloon of a sort, Rowan or whatever it was called. And that it wasn't, in fact, a flying saucer, and that was a lie. Well, they've been telling lies about these things ever since, and it gets to be a habit. And so, you know, we can't really believe just about anything that governments tell us when they have this culture of hiding the truth and of putting out disinformation in order to make us believe something or not believe something that they don't want us to believe. And until we get the truth, there's no solution. And we're in a situation today where the parts of the government are really in control of technology,
mm-hmm.
which could, you know, absolutely devastate the world. That could create havoc, maybe lead us into the Holocaust, another world war.
Sure.
And that seems to be the direction which we're going. Because there are people in the United States, you know, who believe in a new world order, which is defined as an authoritarian government. Not an elected government, an authoritarian government, where they run the world and they run it their way for their benefit. And they're willing to do just about anything that you can think of in order to achieve that goal. And so you were just talking about it didn't seem to matter whether you had an administration that was Democratic or Republican. That is the truth, because you haven't had a president or a Congress for a long while that's been running the United States. What I call in my book, the cabal has been running it.
Exactly, which leads into the money mafia. The cabal has been doing this for a long, long time, haven't they?
They have indeed, and so far back that it makes you wince. And they have accomplished so much that we don't know about, but which we're sufficiently aware of that we have got to do something, because they have plans for the United States and for the world, neither of which are in the interests of the people living in the United States nor of the people living in the world.
Have they factored in, Paul, the factor of Americans won't take it? They're not gonna let this happen. They will fight. They're well armed. and they are not going to let some cabal chase them and take them over. I wonder if they factored that in.
I wonder if they did, but look what they're doing. They're militarizing the police. They're doing all sorts of strange things. They're building concentration camps. They're building railway cars with manacles in them. And these things, for whom? I mean, who are the people that they intend to put in these contracts?
Yeah, we're not going to get invaded like that, so it would be us.
Yeah, so this is serious stuff, and you get the militarized police force, and they take their orders just like the army does, and they, in effect, do the will of the cabal, because that's where they get their money, that's where they get their pay, and they don't really take the people's interests into account when they're given a direct order to do something. And that's dangerous stuff, you know, and I think you ask about, there are people, of course, who sense or know what's going on who are very concerned, and thank goodness for that. But there are more that don't, because the average person just spends so much of their day worrying about trying to get a job or trying to earn enough to keep paying their mortgage or to put food on the table. And they're living from day to day, and they haven't got time to worry about what's going to go on next year.
No.
Or later this year or 5 years from now.
They actually just want to be left alone.
Yeah. They want to be left alone to enjoy life, to have a little time with their family, and to have enough income, which a lot of them don't have, to pay for some of the
conveniences of life.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, they want to go on a little vacation, they want a nice car, they want to go to dinner once in a while, they want to listen to their radio without anybody harassing them. That's really all they want, and if government can give them that, they may let everything else fall into place. I sure hope not. I sure hope people want more than that.
But the government is not giving them that. They have this...
they're not smart enough to give people that.
Great recession that's been going on, for 5 or 6 years?
Easy, yeah.
Yeah, and they're starving the people, a lot of them, and not giving them jobs and not giving them hope. And this is a war between the rich and the poor. It's been going on for a long time, because most of the people in the cabal are the upper class, are the richest of the people. And as you know from my book, the cabal, its apex is really the international banking cartel. And so Wall Street has been calling the shots in the United States. Wall Street brought on the Great Depression, which I lived through.
Sure. And
which caused more misery and poverty than you can describe in words. And then, a couple of terrible recessions, 1981, 82, and 1990, 91, which put people out of their houses and bankrupt their businesses and put them out of their jobs. And then again, this great recession, which keeps sort of lingering on, and there's no hope for it. And you run into situations like they have in Europe now, where finally one tough guy is in Greece is saying enough is enough already. And what happens is life is threatened, because he wants to change the system of shrinking the economy to meet the demands of the international financial system, rather than growing the economy and providing jobs and opportunity and hope for the people. So it's a very serious situation. And if we don't smarten up and do something about it pretty soon, I think we're going to have lost a wonderful opportunity not just a wonderful opportunity, but we're going to have lost the opportunity to salvage what there is left of our hopes and dreams, of the American dream, and of hope for a just and sane world where peace reigns, rather than this perpetual war that has been planned for us by the cabal.
When you were the defense minister, did you see this happening? Did you, or were you aware of what they were doing?
Well, they weren't doing it to the same extent then. I mean, the banking cartel's been there for a long time. It was there when I was there. And they the same mischief that they've been, their Ponzi scheme, which has been ripping off the people for hundreds of years, was in effect then, as is now, and just waiting for somebody to do something about it. And so that wasn't a big deal. And then after the war, the reason I went into politics is because I was someone who, when I asked my economics professors if recessions and depressions were necessary, they couldn't give me a straight answer. So I figured it out and decided they were not necessary and that I had to get in politics and try to do something about it, which is what I, the reason I got in so early in 1949 at age 25. Well, then, of course, they started another war then in Korea, and then they printed enough money to keep the system rolling for another, 15 years. And the depression, the Great Depression that was forecast for 1950 didn't happen. But then later, things started to go downhill again, and they've been going downhill ever since. And this has been because it wasn't long after World War II. For a while after World War II, the division of income between capital and labor and government, certainly in my country, it was reasonably fair, and everybody was reasonably happy. Well, then in 1974, they changed the rules and started letting the Bank for International Settlements, which is sort of the brain center for Wall Street and the City of London, the biggest banks in the world, managed to take over the central banks of the world and start running it for the banks instead of the people.
That's right.
And in 1974 in Canada, there was not one food bank, not one. And today, I think there are about 1,000, and it's still growing.
Paul, as defense minister then, how would you handle ISIS today?
I would take Osama bin Laden's advice and get out of the area and let them solve their own problems and try and negotiate a settlement. You know, this is something that George W. Bush had the opportunity to do and didn't do. Osama bin Laden told him precisely what had to be done for peace. And that was to have a just settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian problem, which has been lingering on for years and years and years, and nobody has really...
Since 48.
Much of a...
Maybe even before that.
Yeah, but they've been working at peace agreements and come very close, but you have some leadership there that doesn't want peace. And so it's rather kind of fatuous to say, well, we'll agree to anything that the two parties can agree on, but when you know that they're not going to agree on anything.
And I'm convinced, Paul, that even if things were peaceful, that we pulled out, and that there's a group out there somewhere, you call it the cabal, could be, who still wants war. They still want this. They want to be able to build their missiles and their weaponry.
Oh, absolutely. Let's roll the clock back just a little bit. And we have discussed on this show before the industrial military complex, mm-hmm. which is all part of the cabal. And their determination, as Wernher von Braun gave to Carol Rosen, that they had to have an enemy. And they had to have an enemy in order to justify the huge military expenditures so that they could make a lot of money.
Of course. If you're at peace, you're not gonna have missiles and weapons and things like that.
That's correct. So they Wernher von Braun told Carol Rosen, he said, first it's going to be the communists. And in my book, I explain something I didn't realize, and that is that Wall Street and some American business were involved in helping the Bolshevik Revolution, helping to finance it, to create the communist system. And then he said it will be the terrorists. And this is exactly what happened, because there were no terrorists really to speak of before 9/11. And you had Osama bin Laden saying, have a just peace between the Israelis and Palestinians, and get American troops off holy soil and out of our hair, stop interfering, and you will have peace. But then that isn't what happened, just the opposite. So you have 9/11, and then that's the excuse for starting another war. And right away, where there were only a handful of terrorists before that, as soon as bombs started dropping on Baghdad, you were creating terrorists by the thousands.
I was told last night by a former military officer who served in Afghanistan and Iraq several times back, and he said that he basically was told that the mission was to get us out of Iraq and to downplay us in Afghanistan. But as soon as we finally left Iraq, they decided to come back in droves. And look what's happened. They have.
Well, sure, but that was just to start another war.
But Saddam Hussein had everything under control. They didn't have these kinds of problems there.
Of course, it was stable at the time. But stability isn't what the military-industrial complex was looking for.
No. Gaddafi had Libya stable. Now, look, Gaddafi was no Boy Scout. No. Saddam Hussein was not a Boy Scout.
No.
But they at least created stability in the region.
That's right. And the United States financed, helped Gaddafi and gave him chemical weapons when he was fighting Iran.
You mean Saddam Hussein?
Saddam
Hussein. Not Gaddafi.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
So, the current runs deep, and there's been no effort, really, on the part of the cabal to have a peaceful world, a just world.
Didn't Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, want to take on the cabal?
I kind of think maybe, well, I think he had a mind of his own, and that's not what they're looking for.
No, and look what happened to him.
Yeah.
So if you get elected president, you generally march to their tune, or you stop marching.
And in most cases, you don't get elected if you aren't already marching to their tune, because they have the money and they decide who the candidates are going to be. The Council on Foreign Relations, which is an integral part of the New World Order, which decided even before World War II was over that they were going to build a new empire that would be greater than the one planned by the Germans, and have been working at it ever since, successfully so far. They've decided just about every candidate who it was going to be, and they pick them on both sides, so it doesn't matter who wins. They have their person, their guy so far in place, and their people who will normally read the scripts the way they're written and do the bidding of the cabal, which is really in charge. And the Congress is about as bad. Remember when the head of Morgan Bank went to see, was before the Senate Finance Committee?
Yep.
He was treated like royalty.
Too big to fail.
Yeah, rather than as a felon, you know.
Yep, too big to fail. Paul, we're going to take this break. We're going to come back and talk more with you about the money mafia, about some extraterrestrials. We're going to take phone calls with you as well. Paul Hellyer with us. He's going to be 92 years old in August, by the way. Paul, we got to have a little happy birthday party for you in August. So we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.